بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Ulama have paid a lot of emphasis on obtaining yaksui. Yaksui, in simple words, focus. Mind mustn't be scattered around all the place. Whatever has to happen will happen. The world is going to continue, but your work is to focus. When the mind is disturbed and the thoughts are scattered, then the entire body, they act upon the instruction they receive from the mind. The limbs will work accordingly. The entire body comes into operation from the instruction that it receives from the mind. So the mind has to be controlled. It has to be in focus. And the focus that the mind is required to have is, it must be focused towards Allah Ta'ala alone. No anticipation and hopes in people. He'll do this, and I'll get this from this person here. So those hopes and those anticipations and thoughts concerning people must be cut off, and it must be entirely turned towards Allah Ta'ala. To understand this condition, this state, they give an example of Al-Mayyit fi yadil ghassal. Like it is the corpse in the hands of the ones that are giving him, administering the ghusl. You see that mayyat, and he is totally helpless. If you raise his hand is raised. If you leave his hand falls. If you raise his feet is raised. And if you leave the hand, if you leave the feet is left. So he acts squarely in accordance to the one that is administering the ghusl for him. He doesn't have any act of his own. So this is what we are aiming towards achieving, that before we are dead, before we die, we already assume that condition. We allow that desire of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the like of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to prevail over us. That what does Allah ta'ala like at any given moment, and my mind must be just absorbed in that all the time. There mustn't be a thought of my own, there mustn't be an anticipation of my own. What Allah ta'ala desires, it must happen. So now to get that type of concentration, to get that type of mindset, that mindset is called yaksui. The other different words they give for the same thing, sometimes they say malaka yaddash, sometimes they say yaksui. So this is something very important that a person should achieve. By the same token, he needs to avoid those areas that will scatter the thoughts. There may be a thing that you will do that will scatter your thoughts, so you must avoid that. Right, and then there are things that will improve your thought, your concentration will improve. So you need to go in that direction that will improve your thought. Now, why is this concentration and this focus so important? That focus is so important because if you have the focus of Allah Ta'ala in your heart, in your mind, then is it possible for you to do any wrong? It's impossible that you'll do any wrong. If you have the presence of Allah Ta'ala with His grandeur, with His greatness, with His majesty, with His might and power, it is impossible for you to do any wrong. The person that is writing his final exams in medicine, and he knows of a surety that if he's going to make a slip, he's going to fail. And he'll have to spend 2 years to recover. Now, there is someone that is individuating in the class. He is there. Will he make a wrong there? When he knows the work, will he make a slip there? He won't make a slip. Because he knows now the type of power, the one that is going around, the type of power he has, the type of control he has, the type of authority he has, you are fully aware of. So you're not going to make a mistake. Now, that type of authority, when you believe that Allah Ta'ala has that type of authority, that type of control, and that type of mindset prevails in your mind at any given moment, then you can't make a slip. The slip that we make normally is because we don't have the type of concentration, the type of presence of mind of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because we don't have that, so we'll slip, we'll look at the thing that we're not supposed to be looking, we'll talk about things that we're not supposed to be talking, we'll engage in things that we're not supposed to be engaging. But why? Because of the same reason. What we're not supposed to be putting our eyes on, we'll put our eyes, we'll steer towards that. We'll listen to that. We'll talk about things that we're not supposed to be engaging. So this concentration, this focus is required. And this focus is, in other words, we call it ihsan. And this, as I explained earlier on, is the finishing of that whole Muslim, that finish. You know, in a building there's three levels. One is talk of the structure of the building, right? The structure may be the foundation, pillars, the beams, slabs, all this is the structure, right? So this is the very, very basic, the basis of the whole building. That is the foundation, the pillars, and the slabs, the beams. This is the basis, right? Without this, the building cannot stand. So iman is the base. Without the iman, nothing can stand. Nothing can work without iman. So that's the base. Then, in order to complete the building, then you need to have walls. You need to have, for example, doors. You need to have walls. So this will complete the building. Now the building has got walls, it's got doors, it's got a toilet, whatever else, it's got all that. Right? So that's the second level. But now you come to the third level of the building, and that is the finishes. Now you need to connect the electricity, you need to connect the water, you need to tile the place up, you need to have the different types of appliances, accessories, the painting, the tiling, the looks of the house. Many a times, in fact most of the times, the value of the house picks up according to the finishes that you put up into the house. And that finishing really finishes you up. Everybody speaks about it in building, that the finishing, it finishes you up. But the real value that is attached to that house is because of the finishes. So, the first level is that iman. And then the second level is what we say Islam, in other words, the obligations and the duties that you have to do. Then it's a third level to bring about that finish in your Iman and your Islam, and that is known as Ihsan, according to the Hadith of Jibreel alayhi salam. Now that is that finish, the completion, the perfection. Without that completion and that perfection, then you don't want to look at that building. There's a building, it's not painted, there's no tiling, there's no appliances, there's no water, there's no electricity, there's no lights in that building. Do you want to live in that house? You don't want to live in that house. It's a haunted house, you don't want to live there. Not for free, you don't want to live there. So that finishes count so much. So that ihsan really brings about that color. It brings about that comfort. It brings about that enjoyment. It brings about that beauty to that mu'min. And without that ihsan, you don't get the beauty in him. Alright, he's a Muslim. He's a Muslim and he's a Hindu. They are two, they are in their own religions. But the real difference, you don't find the real difference. Besides the name Muslim and Hindu, you don't find a real difference in them. Right? He's doing the same thing. He's mixing up with women, so he's mixing up with women. He's watching television, so he's watching television. He's talking all types of things. So he's talking all types of things. He's engaging in all types of business, whether it is interest, whatever else, gambling, insurance, whatever. He's doing the same thing. So when you really sit down and compare the both, you don't find a difference. No difference. But when that Muslim brings that ihsan in him, that consciousness of Allah Ta'ala, that beauty he brings to him, now you say, no, this is a mu'min. This is really a mu'min. Nizamuddin Awliya Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, when he completed his formal studies, so like it was the routine in that time, that after you finished your studies, your formal studies, then a student would think, well, I've completed one aspect of my studies, and that is the things that relate to my physical self. My physical self, whatever it relates to, namaz, roza, zakat, etc., all that I have completed, I have perfected. Now, that is one study that I have completed and perfected, that is the physical, the outer, the apparent, the one that is visible. Now, what about the second line of studies, that is the spiritual, that is not visible, things that relate to the heart? Because if it is just one study, then I have completed one obligation. I haven't completed the second obligation. Like you completed namaz, then it doesn't mean that you will be absolved of not fasting. Namaz is one obligation, and fasting and roza was another obligation. By doing the namaz, you can't say you absolved of your roza. Or if you do the roza, you can't say you absolved of zakat. So this is an obligation on its own, that's an obligation on its own. So this whole effort of the self is islah batin, is the correction of your inner self, is the correction of the inner self. And the correction of the inner self is also compulsory, like the correction of the outer self is compulsory, then the correction of the inner self is also compulsory. You correct your outer self, you give out zakat, correcting your money, correcting your wealth. You correct your outer self, you fast, right? You're correcting your outer self, you're performing namaz. So that's a correction on the outer self. But the correction in the inner self, have you taken the trouble to correct your inner self? If someone thinks about the correction of the inner self, then he thinks, no, let me take out some tasbih and read some tasbih so I correct my inner self. So that's not the correction of the inner self. Reading the tasbih is not the correction of the inner self. It is a help, it is an assistant to the correcting of your inner self. It is not the actual correcting of the inner self. Now what is meant by the correcting of the inner self? Now the correcting of the inner self is as compulsory, as obligatory, like the correcting of the outer self. Namaz, you have to do it, it's correcting of the outer self. Zakat, you have to do it, you have to correct the outer self. So exactly the same, that this is an obligation, this is an obligation also. Now what you mean by correcting the inner self? So the Quran and the Hadith is replete with aspects relating to the inner self. For example, don't be jealous. La tahasadu. Now he's got something, why don't I have it? I'm burning. It comes around the end of the year and this person has got a promotion in the company. I didn't get a promotion. So I'm burning that why did the company give him a promotion and why didn't I get a promotion? So I will try everything in the book to try and smash him down. So I'm burning for him. Why did he get that? Or he got something else in life, some achievement, some success that he gained, but I'm burning for the success that he has got. So this is jealousy. Right? One person had left his home, the time of constraints and difficulties, he left his home, and his wife was all alone there. Now there's hardly any food to eat, and he has gone out with a good niyat that we are suffering with constraints, and we need something to keep our fires burning. So what do I do? So he had to go out. There's no job available in the city, so he went outside. 1, 2 months, 3 months passed. Here she's going through difficulties. So a pious person comes around and he discovers that this woman is going through difficulties. So he said, alright, I'll make dua for you. But the result of this dua will be that whatever you will ask for, you will get that. But the rest of the town will get double as what you will get. So if you make dua, for example, for one Mercedes, then the rest of the town will get two and you'll get one. You make dua for one property, one investment, then you will get one investment, that the whole town will get two investments. You ask for 1 million, so you will get 1 million, but the rest of the town will get 2 million. Now the husband came after 3-4 months, and now the city is flourishing, because now his properties, his buildings, cars, all that, took him a little bit of difficulty and time to find his place. Comes into his place, and he asks, well, what happened? So now this is what happened. When Buzuru came here, he saw me in constraints, and he says, I'll make dua for you, but this will be the result of the dua, that whatever I ask for, I will get that, but the rest of the town will get double as what you will ask for. So now this person, the jealousy, the fire of jealousy, we have this thing here, and we deny. So we are in denial, like how the person that is in drugs is in denial. So many a times we are in denial, but we don't want to discuss it. We don't want to go and bring it to someone's attention and try and correct ourselves. We say, no, I'm doing enough. I'm doing my namaz, I'm doing my roza is enough. That finer things I don't have to work on. But that finer things may be really destructive. If outwardly you seem to be right, but the doctor says you've got cancer, is that good health? No, you have to go and check it out. You have to go and check it out. You have to go for that radium, chemotherapy, whatever you have to go for. So just looking at the outside is not sufficient. It's important, the outside. But the inner is also equally important. So now that jealousy had the better over him. And so he raises his hand and he says, oh Allah Ta'ala, bust my one eye. So the whole town was blind. Because whatever you'll ask, you'll get that. But the whole town will get double as what you had asked for. So he can't see them prospering. He can't see them flourishing. But he can see them suffering. He can see them going through pain and difficulty. Then that wasn't sufficient. Then he says, oh Allah Ta'ala, break my one leg. So the whole town is lame now. Nobody can walk. All are handicapped. You see, this one aspect of jealousy in the Quran and the Hadith is speaking about these things. That like you working on the external self, the outer self, you need to work on the inner self as well. And that inner self is known as Islah Batin. And this whole tasawuf is about Islah Batin. Correct yourself. From within yourself, correct. And these other things that are suggested to you, make some zikr, this time, that time, whatever. Now those zikrs, etc., are given to support you, to assist you. So it will only assist you if there is some existence. If there is an existence, can it support? It can only support, it can only assist if there is an existence. Right? You'll see that an orange has got energy, right? But it will provide energy if there is a body. If there is no body, can that orange give you energy? Can't give you energy. You need to take that orange, put it into that body, then the body will be supported. But there is no body then. So one is that orange and one is the body. So the body is like the limb, see the limb, the actual limb. So this Islah is about that limb, to correct that limb. So one is, jealousy is just one aspect. Okay. Then you get a thing like pride and ostentation. No. I must be recognized. People must respect me. They must talk to me. I must be known, conspicuous, outstanding. They say that ghibat, backbiting, is worse than zina. Right? But why is backbiting worse than zina? Overall, when we look at zina, then we consider it as something very, very disgusting, right? Oh, this person committed zina. So we consider it as a very, very disgusting thing. But if it is ghibat and he is engaged in backbiting, we don't take it as serious. Nowadays Allah Ta'ala make us maaf, but that ghibat is like how there was a fly on your nose and you just pushed it away. So that is how we treat ghibat. But that ghibat in the hadith is counted to be worse than zina. But now what was the reason that this has to be counted worse than zina? The reason is multiple. One is that we don't take it seriously, we don't count it as a guna, we don't count it as a serious thing. Like a person has committed zina, so he'll make tawbah, he'll ask Allah's forgiveness, he'll cry until his mind is cleared. But he's committed ghibat, he's coming to the masjid and he's making ghibat. Outside the masjid he's making ghibat. It doesn't even concern him, it doesn't even worry him that I engage in ghibat. And if it is brought to his attention, then he will say, no, I'm speaking the truth. So when you're speaking the truth about your brother, that's clearly ghibat. That is exactly ghibat. So that's the one reason. That ghibat is so detestable in the Sharia. The second reason why that ghibat is so detestable in the Sharia is you only make ghibat of that person that you look down upon, you despise upon. The one that you consider as your equal or above you, then you don't make ghibat about him. But the one that you despise, you look down upon, you will make ghibat about him. Like for example, as Sheikh Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani rahmatullah alayh, will anybody make ghibat of him? No. In Calcutta, I asked one person, what's your name? He said, Abdul Qadir Jilani. His exact name, what's your name? He said, what's your name? Abdul Qadir Jilani. The only rahmatullah alayh was missing there, that's all. So we won't make ghibat about a pious personality, a great personality that we hold in esteem and respect. We won't make ghibat about him because we hold him in esteem. But the one that we want to run down, then we'll make ghibat about him, we'll speak about him. So when the person is engaging in ghibat, then he considers himself to be superior, and that person that he's making ghibat about, he considers him to be inferior. If he considered him as superior, he wouldn't have run him down. He's running him down because he considers himself to be superior to him. So that is clearly ghibat, where you consider yourself to be superior to your brother. You want to despise him, you want to run him down. Okay. Now, there's a little bit of detail that is required, you see, to understand pride and arrogance. Right. One is, if you've got a blessing, you've got something, an achievement, a blessing, a good, but you count it as a favor of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that I have got this, and this person doesn't have it, but I have got it as a blessing of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I haven't got it of my own achievement. So that is not pride and arrogance. Like, one person is a hafiz, so I count myself to be better in that respect that I know the Quran Sharif, and this person doesn't know the Quran Sharif, he's not a hafiz. I recite the Quran Sharif with tajweed, and this person cannot recite the Quran Sharif, nor does he know tajweed. So in that respect, I consider myself to be better. But I don't count this as a personal achievement. I count it as the favor of Allah Ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala's favor. Allah Ta'ala wants, he will keep it. Allah Ta'ala wants, he will shift it away. So this is not pride. This is a fact. That you're not considering it as a personal achievement, you're considering it as a favor of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is not pride, it's a fact. Like, how to illustrate it. If the sun's rays, or if the sun is reflecting on a mirror, right? The sun is reflecting in its full bloom, midday, and the thing is reflecting on a mirror. So you see the reflection, you see the beauty, you see the radiance of the sun on the mirror. But can the mirror be boastful of itself, that I am greater? Can it be boastful? If it's boastful, then it is stupid. Because it's not your own achievement. It is the goodness of the sun that is reflecting on you. Right? And if the sun wants, if it had its own way, it can just move its radiance away from the mirror. What's left of the mirror? Mirror is in total darkness. So that radiance that you see, the beauty, the brightness, the radiance that you see on the mirror, is it of its own? Is it an achievement of its own? No. It is purely the glory of the sun. If the sun moves away its glory, that thing is covered in darkness. So exactly when you see some goodness in you, someone sees wealth in him. I got wealth, I got properties, I got knowledge, right? I got strength and might, I got power and authority, I got the beauty in me. So he can't be proud about himself, because that is a reflection of the beauty of Allah Ta'ala. It's a reflection of the greatness and the glory of Allah Ta'ala. It's a reflection of the power and the might of Allah Ta'ala that's reflecting on you. Allah Pak willing, and in a second's time, you can just turn it away. Don't you see? Man is absolutely fit, normal. Absolutely normal, right? And by the morning you hear, he's paralyzed from the waist downwards. Don't you have cases that, we heard just now, 25-year-old youngster, perfectly normal, fit as a fiddle, going to the gym, doing everything, very, very fit, 25 years, 26 years of age, he got up in the morning, and he's paralyzed from the waist downwards, can't do anything, can't walk, can't move, he can't do things for himself. So you see that strength that you got is not of your own. Whatever you're doing is not your own, it is Allah Ta'ala's given. Allah Pak wants, just in a flash of a moment, you can move it away. Then what's left of you? Nothing left of you. See? So then can you really be proud of yourself? That wealth that you are boastful about, in a flash of a moment, Allah Ta'ala can take that wealth away. Can make you do something wrong, and everything is wiped away. Something goes wrong in your mind. Something just goes wrong in your mind, and that entire wealth is gone. You go to the casino, you go somewhere, something wrong went into your mind and you wiped everything out, you burned everything out. Can it happen or can't it happen? So can you be proud about that wealth? You can't be proud about it. You don't know. It's an, I won't do it. Yes, you won't do it. But if Allah Ta'ala moves away His glory from you, like the sun moves away the glory, Allah Ta'ala moves away the glory of restraining from haram, He removes it from you. And you say, no, hey, this person became so wealthy, and I need to do something as well, you know. So that thought over it prevails over you. It overwhelms you. Like you ask the person who's involved himself in zina, right? So he knew it was haram. Didn't he know it was haram? He knew it was haram. But precisely at the moment that he committed that wrong, this thought of zina had overwhelmed him. It overtaken him, and this thought had been suppressed. He committed the wrong, then he came to his senses, hey, what I did. Doesn't it happen? Whether it was zina, real zina he's done, or he's done zina with the eyes, or zina with the ears, you do zina with the ears as well. Over the telephone you're chatting, and you can see it's a nice, cute little voice, and you want that conversation to continue. So isn't it zina? Zina. And you know it's haram. But at that moment you are overwhelmed, and you overwhelmed, and you do it, and then you come to your senses, no, I've done this, I've done wrong. Right? So something can happen to your mind, and all that wealth that you have earned, everything can be wiped away. Can't it happen? It can happen. That we see all the time. Man was, where was he? And now where is he? Where was he? And where is he now? So this pride has to be flushed out of that system for that islah batin, the correction of the inner self, that pride has to be washed out, has to be flushed out. And you don't get that flushed out, then you in serious problems. In the hereafter, Allah Pak says clearly, I don't like these people. The class of the proud, the class of the arrogant, la yuhibbul mustakbir, I don't like you. So is there any chance for you? When the Quran is saying, I don't like you. Is there any chance for that person? No chance. Allah Pak says, I don't like you. I dislike you. Any chance? Forget the hereafter, even in this world. In this world, what will happen is, you will seem to be good in your eyes, but in the eyes of people, really, you've got no worth. But in your mind, you think you are good. But in the eyes of people, Allah has taken away that respect, has deprived you of that respect, and you go on, finish. So I don't like you. See? So both ways you've lost out. So this islah is aimed at the batin, at the inner self. Correct these things here. Get these things corrected. And these things don't get corrected of your own. You have to have a tutor. You've got cancer. Can you treat yourself? You've got a heart problem. Can you treat yourself? You can't. These things here, we know clearly that you can't treat yourself. Allah Pak's system is that you can't treat yourself. One in a thousand, one in a million person, he went on a green diet and he cured himself of cancer. That's an isolation, right? Isolated case. Isolated case, it doesn't become a rule. The general patient, what he does, he goes to the hospital, he goes and corrects himself. He needs the assistance of someone. Without that assistance, without that guide, he doesn't get himself corrected. So, in our physical matters, in medical things, we relate. But in spiritual things, we don't relate. No, I can treat myself. I can get the thing corrected myself. I don't need the assistance. I don't need the guidance of another person. So you see how important this is. And forget the hereafter, notwithstanding the hereafter. Can't forget the hereafter. But notwithstanding the hereafter, it destroys this life as well. When a person has got jealousy, doesn't he destroy his life and the life of others? When he's got pride, doesn't he destroy his own life and the lives of others as well are being destroyed just because of his pride, just because of his jealousy? So you are making this life here, this present life, you're making it a life of misery just because you haven't corrected yourself internally. Your inner self is not corrected. So we're talking of Nizamuddin Awliya Sahib Rahmatullahi, and I've just branched off to explain what it is, what is meant by the Islah Batin. So he completed his formal studies and he says, no, I need to go for my spiritual studies now. I need to correct myself spiritually. So he went to Hazrat Fariduddin or Hazrat Qutbuddin Bakhtiyar Kaki Rahmatullahi, that I need to go and correct myself. So this Buzurg tells him, alright, you need to correct yourself. The first thing in the list is, have you got any huququl ibad? Anything outstanding, you hurt someone, whether it was verbally, whether it was materially, whether it was physically, whichever way, have you hurt anybody? Now it set him thinking, I was studying here, and I slipped up that bookbinder that did my kitabs, I forgot to pay him, a small amount, 20 rands or 15 rands, I just forgot. I was studying, I got so absorbed in my study, I was supposed to give him 15 or 20 rands and I forgot to give it to him. So that Buzurg tells him that if you don't settle this, then you can't climb up the spiritual ladder. You'll be going up and you'll be falling. You'll be climbing up and you'll be falling again. You need to go and settle all this. If you hurt anybody financially, materially, physically, whichever way, verbally, but go and sort these things out, then only can you ascend. Without that, you can't ascend. Then you can do how much, whatever ibadat. But really, you're not going to progress. You can't make the type of progress that you need to make. So he traveled approximately 1,000 kilometers to go and pay out 15 or 20 rands in that zamana, where there was no train, no bus, no motor car, no aeroplane. How much it must have costed him to travel 1,000 kilometers? No, you don't have proper stations, you don't have proper cars, nothing. You have to travel on foot or you have to travel on horseback. 1,000 kilometers, pay the 20 rands. He comes up to this big bookbinder. He comes to the shop to find that the bookbinder shop is closed. So, he's gone old now and he's closed his shop. So he finds out, locates the house, he comes up to him. The bookbinder has gone so old, he can hardly open his eyes. So he struggles and opens his eyes, looks at the person. So where have you come from? No, I forgot to pay you your 20 rands. Where are you coming from? From so-and-so town. This Buzurg. Oh, maine suna ke waha par ek musalman rehta hai. I understood that there is one Muslim living there. You see that Islam, when it's practiced, when the ihsan is practiced, even a non-Muslim can make out that there is a difference between me and him. He lives for something else. There is something else that is above him that he is so concerned about. He believes in reckoning. He believes in the life after death. He believes in continuity. Whereas I don't have that. Now that belief in the continuity, the life after death, reckoning, hisab, standing before Allah Ta'ala, that has forced him to travel so long, so such a big distance, and come here and pay me the 20 rands. So, I have heard that there is a Muslim there. I've heard that there is one Muslim there. See, that Hindu also is saying, that person has got ihsan, who has got the consciousness and the awareness of Allah Ta'ala, then he is fit to be called a Muslim. According to him, he doesn't see others as Muslim, because we're all the same now. I rob, cheat, try and do things underhand, and they do it also. So really, there's no difference. We talk with women, mix up, talk, flirt, etc. We're doing it, they're doing it. We look at porn, they look at porn. We dress up, they dress up. We go to all places, they go all places. So really, there's no difference. But if there's a difference, no, this person here, he's with us, but he's living in a different plane. He's living in the akhirat, he's living in the hereafter. He's got that consciousness, that awareness. So that is the person that is fit to be called a mu'min. And even that non-Muslim can see it. No, he's got ihsan, so he's a Muslim. And if he doesn't have that, then he considers you as part of himself. There's no difference between our behavior and your behavior. Allah Ta'ala grant us that tawfiq, that understanding, that this spiritual self, how important it is to correct it. With it, how much beauty do you add to life? Now imagine you're living amongst people. Nobody is proud, nobody is arrogant, nobody is boastful. How enjoyable life becomes. He doesn't have an attitude, he's not boastful, he's simple, easy to get along. How comfortable, manageable and pleasant life becomes. And minus this, how miserable life comes. Now he's got an attitude, you can't talk to the person, he's tight-lipped, you can't even talk to him, you can't approach him. How difficult, how unbearable life becomes. So really this correction of the inner self, it brings about the splendor and the beauty of life. Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib.